Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Water is life. Protect the wildlife, say Indigenous activists leading thousands in protest of Enbridge's Tar Sands Line 3 pipeline in northern Minnesota. The Line 3 pipeline project in Minnesota, if completed, will move up to 915,000 barrels of tar sands oil per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. Tar sands oil is one of the dirtiest energy sources on the planet. The 337-mile stretch of pipeline now being built in Minnesota would cross Indigenous Anishinaabe treaty lands, threatening their sacred wild rice crop, which requires clean water to grow. I'm joined now, right from the front lines, by Simone Sinagles with the Indigenous Environmental Network and an Anishinaabe from the Red Lake Nation of Ojibwe in northern Minnesota, and Angel Stevens, an Anishinaabe wild rice harvester and a member of the anti-pipeline Menominee camp, and Silas Neeland, one of the youngest Indigenous water protector warriors. Thank you for joining us. Why don't we start with Angel, then follow through with Simone.
Anibuju, Nina Jenene, Indigenous Jaganashimoin, Gabwalpop, Biganakog, and Dunjaba. My name is Angel. I'm from the White Earth Reservation. I was born and raised there. I'm also part of the White Earth Constitutional Reform on the reservation also. I'm an activist for Native rights. I feel like I'm a big part of this reservation.
I also was told one other thing by Simone, that you're the mother of one of the youngest activists. So who is that youngest activist and how young?
My pride and joy, his name is Silas Neeland. He's 13. He's also from the White Earth Reservation. We're actually from the small community of Rice Lake, which is located right on the southern part of White Earth Reservation. And yeah, he's actually sitting right here too.
Maybe we can get a couple of words from him at some part in our discussion. And Simone, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? Then we'll really get into the meat of the incredible and arduous campaign work that you folks have been doing.
Yeah, and I think that Angel and Silas are actually right now on the ground doing it, if I'm correct.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, we're good. We're going to find out more about it right now on line from the line of march.
Oh, you're where?
We're right outside of Bagley on the Clearwater River, right on Highway 2. We were notified earlier that there was a frack out. And actually, yeah, Ron was just here, Simone, and he was here with his drone, and he verified that it was indeed a frack out, and that's what they're doing over there right now, cleaning it up.
Holy smokes.
We're going to get back to that in a minute. You're going to tell us a lot more about what's going on there, what it is, after we find out what brings Simone to the struggle. This is, it's breaking, and I want to find out more, too. So we're going to go back there in a moment.
Okay. So my name is Sarah. I should introduce myself in my language, too. So, Buju, Chinotami Kwe, Indigenikas, Squagami, Wizaga, Iganing, and Donjiba, Anishinaabe Kwe, and Dao, Migizi, and Dudem. My name is Simone. My family is from the Red Lake Nation here in northern Minnesota. Although I was raised in the city in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and also lived a long time in Bemidji, Minnesota. My clan is Eagle Clan, and we are Anishinaabe. These home territories where Line 3 is going through, so it's important to us on the global scale, but it's also just, it's our homelands, it's our home territories. And I work for the Indigenous Environmental Network, where I've worked for the past 20 years on environmental justice issues within Indian country.
We're going to go right back, since we're in the middle of something now, to Angel. Angel, tell us more exactly about what you just found out and what you and Silas are doing on that land and where that fits in to the struggle around stopping the Line 3 pipeline. Angel?
The Clearwater River, it's located near Bagley, Minnesota, and it's, well, actually, I live like 13 miles away from here, which is south of Bagley on the reservation. We just discovered a frack out, and this Clearwater River is also on the Minnesota Impaired Rivers list because it has wild rice on it. Yeah, the Enbridge has had a big effect on our wild rice season, big effect.
Talk to us about what the implications is, particularly since you're talking to somebody like me who is so urban. I don't even begin to understand the, you know, wild rice. Talk about it and the importance of the culture and industry of Anishinaabe people.
Wild rice is the reason why the Anishinaabe are basically here. According to our teachings, we migrated east along 7 stopping signs or the east coast over there, and we migrated west over to the land here in Minnesota, where they said at our final stopping place, we will find the food that grows on water. In the Minnesota, Wisconsin, Canada, I'm even finding out there was even a wild rice lake in Texas. You know, that surprised me. It made me happy, but it surprised me that we are the keepers of this. We take care of this food that grows on water. We are the protectors of this wild rice. And
well, it's happening in real time in our real lives. You know, we're seeing the destruction and the impacts that Angel is talking about, like literally in real time when we're in our communities, when we're driving down the road, you know, the effects that Enbridge is having on our waters and lands and our wild rice, it's right there.
Yeah, tell us more about Enbridge and what that really looks like and how this is destroying, or Enbridge is destroying, really the wild rice, which is part of the entire culture of a people and part of its current staple and reality for sustenance and so on. Tell us more about Enbridge and what they're up to.
The way I'm looking at it, Enbridge is a Canadian corporation, you know, coming into our homeland, and they're putting in this pipeline, their oil coming from Canada straight through our lands to go to a boat by Lake Superior, and then it's going to be cargoed off to another country. I see no benefits to where it would benefit us at all. You know, there's like how many pipelines are moving across this country? There's so many going right now that it's predicted that we won't have any of those resources by, like, what, 2030, 2050, and that we'll have to start conserving in some way. And yet they're continuing to build pipelines across our homelands. Been many, many tribes that have said, no, you know, this is not the way that we don't want your pipeline. My own tribe here, White Earth Nation, we said no to the pipeline, so they built it alongside our borders to our reservation. But what they didn't know was that they were building it in 1855 treaty land, which gave us the inherent right to hunt, gather, fish on those same lands. So that also gives us the say, you know, what's going to happen to those resources that we're using on that land. So far, the state of Minnesota has not even recognized our voice. They have not recognized us as people that actually live here, that vote. My own tribe right now has a court case along with Red Lake and a couple organizations that Enbridge, this Canadian corporation that's building this pipeline, is violating the rights of our Monomen. You know, we actually have it in our constitution. Our Monomen has rights. Yeah, we gave it, like, it has life. It gives us life. So it's, yeah, my mom and I can even hear
the weariness and pain in your voice. You know, I'm looking at a map right now, and I see the Red Lake Reservation and the White Earth Reservation surrounded by what looks like all of this magnificent lake reservations and waterfalls, et cetera. So for, again, people in more urban areas who don't necessarily digest how dangerous or what really the problematic is, because Enbridge is going to say, hey, of course we respect the rights. We don't want to pollute the water. We don't. They may not say as much about the sovereignty of the Indian land and Indian country rights, but what do you say to them? I mean, what is the actual problem with these pipelines coming in? What has been the experience? What do they do, both in the process of sinking them and building them, as well as the maintenance of them? What does this do to the land and the people who have for generations lived and tilled the soil and made it into a sustaining environment for their peoples?
Give you an example for right now that I'm really mad about. It's like during this process, you know, they were taking water from our wild rice lakes. They've been draining out. You know, we have a drought going on in Minnesota. And state of Minnesota just gave Enbridge in June a permit for 55 billion gallons of water during a drought. So the effects of this, I live near my ricing lake is Lower Rice Lake. I live in the community of Rice Lake. You know, I live right there, right on the lake. So Upper Rice and Lower Rice are connected. You know, back in the day, they were one big lake. It's called Rice Lake. And it was divided by, like, all these allotments and all these acts, like, for example, the Nelson Act, where they allotted these lands. They took these, apparently, they gave these lands to natives, and then they took them right away. But because of, like, fights over lands, because of things like that, you know, that lake was divided. So because the state of Minnesota gave that permission to Enbridge to take water, they automatically assume this Upper Rice Lake is a state lake, and it's even though it has wild rice, they got permission to take from it, which in turn, you know, with this Menomen rights, they did not have permission to take from that lake. They shouldn't even touch that lake in the first place. We're Minnesota. Like, it even says on the state, on our plate, land of 10,000 lakes. Of all the lakes to be in and around here, they had to mess with our Upper Rice. I didn't even get to go ricing this year, but that draining of Upper Rice Lake did, it drained Lower Rice Lake. What the ricers had to do this year was they had to drag their canoes out maybe about 500 to 1,000 feet more through mushy mud. I even helped make a, dock-like out to water so we could get the canoes out, so we can help the canoes and the ricers out there get out to the water. In some places, if they didn't do that, they did. They had to walk through all that mushy mud. We also had ricers get stuck out on the lake all night. And the rescue team was not prepared for that. And that's some of the things that they didn't consider when they were making those decisions. You know, they didn't think about the ricers. They didn't think about, like, people that use the land here. They just automatically thought about the money. And now that they're facing all these money problems and everything that's going through, all I see is that everything's going through the court cases, you know, and it's just Enbridge thinks they're going to pay everybody for their losses, for these frustrations, for these. And it's frustrating to think, you know, what if they do get away with all this, you know, just because they can throw money at it?
Seems like they are so far.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go there. I don't know that we're going to see that so far, but we'll find out more about it. And, of course, the enormous resistance that's going on. But, you know, first, just to, I won't even say play devil's advocate, but what do you say to people? You've already said a good deal of it, but even more, they say, well, the new line, three pipeline, would have a huge capacity of 760,000 barrels per day of oil, and they would serve markets all over Minneapolis. People absolutely need this. We are still an energy oil-dependent nation to fuel our industry and homes. So you're saying we've got our lakes and our water and our treaty rights, and we've got our rice development. But what further do you also say to Enbridge about the whole machinations of these oil pipelines coming in and what oil energy even means to people at this time, since they're saying they're providing a great service.
Angel already did say something about the fact that none of this oil is going to go to our state. So we're going to have no energy benefits, but we're going to have lots of destruction to our water, our wild rice, our land, even our communities. It's very divisive. A company comes in and uses money to try to get their way. It divides community. And so there's really nothing good that Enbridge is bringing to us, harming us in just tremendous and heartbreaking ways. Where Angel is not that far from the headwaters of the Mississippi River. And we've all learned about the Mississippi River. It's an iconic river. It's an iconic American river. And it's our homeland, the headwaters of this beautiful river. You know, we all spent time there. You know, I swam in that river just weeks before Enbridge started drilling in that very spot. And I would not get in there now because they've had frackouts, which Angel just mentioned. And there's another frackout at the site that she's at now, which is the Clearwater River. Enbridge has been actually spending a lot of time. I think they were like the largest lobbying force, but they just spent millions of dollars lobbying, are sort of bullying and bulldozing and fighting their way through our state. But none of this oil is going to be used by us. It's all going to be exported, as far as I understand. Is that what you understand too, Angel?
The effects of what Enbridge is doing now, a lot of people are waking up and realize, what are we doing? You know, especially with this ricing season that I was reading on some of these informal reports about the ricing season. Our first week off of Lower Rice Lake, we should have had more than at least 100,000 pounds off of there, maybe 10,000 at least over that. But they didn't even reach 9,000 pounds the first week.
And what actually does it do, Angel? Physically, what happens? What's been also the experience with Enbridge? I mean, the pipeline that they're talking about now is actually, quote unquote, a replacement pipeline, and even a bigger one than one that already existed. So what's been the experience with the pipeline and with the Enbridge company as well, with their Line 3 oil pipeline project?
It's not a replacement. It's a whole new line. Like I said, they rerouted it alongside of our White Earth Reservation borders, like from Park Rapids all the way through Clearbrook. It's lined up right next to our reservation. And that should have been our first warning how they were going to be. That's like amateur right there. Like, it's ridiculous how much you can get away with when you have so much money. Enbridge can laugh at me all they want. They think they know a lot, but what they don't know is the tribes. They never bothered, or they never learned, or even tried to like communicate with us. So now they're reaching down to Minneapolis for their lawyers, urban lawyers, to fight tribes that are on reservations. They're not as slick as they think they are.
That's for sure. They never are. And the people do win. And the people's will and righteousness, as we've seen time and time again, is superior to the man's technology. And we've got to make that so. I also, you know, want you to talk the issue of pollution. The old pipeline, which is deteriorating. And so don't these things also, I mean, there's a whole process which releases what I understand are drilling fluids and so on along the Line 3 oil pipeline, enormously, terrifyingly destructive to the environment. Tell us about that and a courageous, remarkable fight back that is going on, which we haven't even touched on yet.
Angel, do you want to explain what a frackout is?
Basically, when they're drilling, they kind of like hit, there's like a little formation, like to reach their groundwater. And as they're doing this, they hit a wall in there and it releases like a hole where like that groundwater and everything else that's above that mixes together. And it's like, we don't know what chemicals they use in these drill things, because it's some kind of secret something where they don't want the public to know. And
you know, they both,
this stuff is floating up into
things.
Our rivers. Yeah, I don't know. Just like I said, it's just coming up into our rivers. Like, even seeing it, we were out in that Mississippi, you know, floating away, swimming. After those frackouts happen, the waters turn like a murky kind of gray. And you know how,
wow,
they always say that everything goes downstream? While we were over there by Bisida, I'd go to the headwaters, which is upstream from there, and that water would have that same look to it, that same gray, murky look to it. And this was upstream. So then the effects of that frack out or those drills, you know, it affected people upstream also.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that there's like this drilling fluid that's used, it lubricates really the drilling process. And one can only imagine these are not natural substances, no matter what they are. And what this means for this beautiful land and waters that flow through and which people have been the guardians of for hundreds of years. Simone, you know, your understanding and thoughts on this. And what are they going to do with the old corroding pipeline, which was bad enough as well?
They're going to leave it in the ground, most of it, and not clean it up. And let it continue to corrode and pollute our waters. And so
there have been spills from that existing pipeline as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the largest inland oil spill was from Enbridge, about 60 miles from here in, was it 1998
in Grand Rapids.
I just read a study. I think it's since 2018, I think it was. The basic bottom line is that the company has a history of spills, and not just little spills, but catastrophic spills, spills with thousands and thousands of gallons, and spills that have gone unreported, unattended for long periods of time. And one of the things that Enbridge is really good at in our community is utilizing the media and messaging to lull people into compliance and acquiescence around this pipeline by spreading, you know, outright lies that they have, that Enbridge, the company itself, has a stellar safety record, and that they have this great technology that will allow them to monitor for any little spill, when in fact spills can go for days, months, and not be attended to, and that we are using this energy. So there's just a lot of misinformation that the company is putting out. And they're also spreading misinformation about their process with tribal people and tribal nations. So they're saying that there was consent, there was consultation. And we deny that was really as comprehensive as they want to portray. And then we just saw something recently put out by Enbridge about their cultural sensitivity and how much they care about Native people and our culture. It was just like, it was literally sickening. It made me sick to my stomach to read it. And we were just like, who are they talking about? You know, like there's this whole facade in front of the reality of the way that they are destroying us. And for those of us who are working on the front line, and for myself, I've only been really directly involved with Enbridge since last December. And my heart is broken. It takes a lot for those of us to really fight this. Plus, we're living our regular lives. So just such a destructive industry coming through our beautiful homelands. And for those who don't know or haven't been to Minnesota, we're the land of 10,000 lakes, and it's actually more than that. And it's not just lakes, but it's rivers and wetlands and swamps, and it's so beautiful, and water. So, you know, if you pollute water in one spot, it's going to spread everywhere, and not just on the surface water. But Enbridge has just been served suit for piercing an aquifer. Our lakes have gone down so far that we can see it. I live on the Mississippi River, and my dock is no longer in the water. My dock is in the mud. Like my sister Angel was just saying a minute ago about, like, our ricers, you know, the way that we harvest Manomin or wild rice is in canoes. Our ricers cannot even get to the lakes because the edge of the lake is so dried up that they have to walk through mud. People have talked about even having to use snowshoes to get through the mud in order to get to our life-giving food source, which is integral to who we are as a people. Everything about us is, we are wild rice people. I mean, it's not just about the money benefit of wild rice. It's about how we connect with our homeland. It's the reason we're even here and why we migrated from the East Coast to this place. And our stories, our teachings told us, keep going until you get to where the food grows on the water. And that's wild rice. That's Manomin. Everything to us, and to have it attacked like this, it wrenches our hearts out. To see our young people not be able to do it either, I mean, there's just so many ramifications to the destruction that Enbridge is perpetuating upon us. we're super racist. Like, we're also getting attacked by our neighbors because they don't want us natives standing up. They want us to be quiet and get out of the way.
Angel's already pointed out the changing in the coloration and the clarity of the water. What's happening to the aquatic life?
They have lesions on them, big, like, white bubbles on their bodies, the little fish. Rivers are drying up. We've seen footage of turtles dead or stuck in the middle of a dry riverbed. Puddles where rivers once were, where fish are just hiding because they can't move or get out, and fish are sick. Yeah, it's terrible.
Aside from the drought, they're actually extracting water. Is that part of the process?
Originally, Enbridge had a permit to remove, I think it was 50 million gallons of water, but they amended it. And now their permit allowed them to take 5 billion gallons of water.
Is that for a cooling process, et cetera, for the drilling, or?
There's a couple different things. So one is needing to take water out of the trench where they lay pipe. And then the other big thing is to hydrostatic test the integrity of the pipes. So they, you know, put the water through to see if it's going to leak. I don't know if Angel wanted to add more.
Yeah, I do. Actually, like, one of the whole moves that they made while we were out there near the bridge was, as those trucks are moving in and out of those new access roads they built, they track mud and everything from those new dirt roads. They were using the water trucks to water down the mud on the road to brush it off.
Yep, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like, we don't have enough water. I've never in my life, we live in the most water-rich place in the world. And we had, where we couldn't, I couldn't even water my garden. There was watering restriction. Then to see this company destroying our waterways and literally sucking out water with huge pipes right out of the river, putting it in trucks and using it to destroy our communities. To say added insult to injury is not enough. Where are all the agencies to stop it? Because no one is doing anything except us.
I've been speaking with Simone Sinagles with the Indigenous Environmental Network, Angel Stevens, Anishinaabe Wildlife Harvester and member of the Anti-Pipeline Menominee Camp, and Silas Neeland, 13-year-old Indigenous Water Protector. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.